Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson, flying solo in the studio, quote unquote, right now. Excuse me. So it's almost the holidays. FYI, got two more episodes yet this year. Yay. So to take you into the new year. So, we now have two world championships. That won't be at all confusing. So, not a fan. I know there's a lot of great people with the A1 group and all that, and the Spartan and yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, it's going to be really complicated now. And where are all the people going to come from? And we're already having conflicts with USA Nationals and Worlds and Solo Nationals, except Jeff was stepped up and moved, so that's cool. And, yeah. And I don't think adventure racing should be an Olympic sport anyway, and it never will be, because to what sport's going to drop for adventure racing, and how are you going to take away 8 or 10 or 16 athletes from another sport, so adventure racers can go. It's cool. Could happen. Probably not in my lifetime, but I'm old, so we'll just have to wait to see what happens, as they say, whoever they are. Anyway, hey, I'm not very smart. I've been proven wrong lots and lots of times, so maybe this will be the best thing that ever happened. So, if you're listening to this when it comes out, I'm on my way to Florida. Sebring International Raceway for Champ Car Race Weekend. And, I'm not unhappy to get out of here from this weather, but it was 60 degrees today. So, but I will take 85 in Florida. So no Merry Christmas, because you'll get another one before Christmas, but get out there, get your shopping done, and have a good time. Slow is fast. I'd say you could give somebody the gift of a podcast gift certificate, but there is no such thing. So just tell them to listen. Anyway, I'm a rambling man. Let's get this on the road with Quest Racing and their story of the World Championships in Spain. So, slow is fast. Fast is good. Be safe. Take a chance or two. And have fun. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hello.
Hey.
Sorry, I was on a Safari. It doesn't support audio for Zoom.
Of course it doesn't. Why would it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks like you have wood paneling too. In your house.
Well, actually.
Or wood wall, a log cabin?
It's a log home.
Nice.
Hey, Randy.
And all the other. Eddie. And all the other, everything else is wood. There's not any sheetrock in it.
Wow.
The downstairs walls are metal roofing, made out of metal roofing.
So. Nice. Wow.
Yeah. So we like it. Yeah. Yeah, you got the good old fashioned knotty pine. If I didn't know better, I'd say you were in a cabin in Minnesota.
Almost.
Yeah.
I think the lighting's okay. Is this a video?
Okay.
Is this
going to be shared? We're just doing audio. Just audio.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But it is. Woo! But I found it. It is nice to be able to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of Zoom when the pandemic hit, but now it's so much easier just to send you guys a link and let you deal with it.
Yeah.
And I don't have to call four different people or, you know, do all that stuff. So it's much easier. Yeah. So who's all joining? Anybody else?
Yeah, both Matt and Scarlett should be. Okay. I sent them the link, so.
Okay. We can just chat till they get here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't ask anything about how's the swim run races going. There, see, I can ask.
I think this year went well. I think there was like a pretty pro course marking sabotager. Everyone did maybe like an extra mile, just cause someone went and like, right. Basically, Brent set some of the course like the night before the race. And during that time, someone like went out and switched arrows to point the opposite direction and then took confidence flags down and like put them down a completely other trail. So I think that was the only really hiccup was that. Otherwise, you know, it was, I think it was a good turnout and the adventure race went well. I mean, it was not the biggest turnout, but it wasn't the smallest either. So, yeah. So that's good.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. So are the swim races still being popular?
I think so. I mean, they're still a bigger deal over, I mean, maybe East Coast Europe or whatever, somewhere.
Yeah, I think
faster than adventure racing. I'll just say that.
Yeah, that's true. I think Scandinavia is huge.
You know, yeah.
For them, yeah. We met a guy who runs now I can't think of the name of it, swim run that part of the course has steps. They go up along a pipeline, 2,220 steps.
Wow. So you have
to go up. And and one of the checkpoints on the run is it's the most famous area in Norway where they filmed the last fight scene for Mission Impossible.
Oh.
Big flat rock area. Yeah. So apparently that's a really popular, I mean, got pictures, you know, of the race, and there's like hundreds of people, just tourists around. So we were thinking about going last year. He actually came over here and was him and another guy were looking at doing a off-road triathlon in the Black Hills.
Oh, and cool.
Then, of course, the world went to hell. So that's all been put on hold. But it's just, there's just getting to be so many things. It's like, I've got like conflicts already for next year. It's like, what do I do? I got to do this. I got to do so, which I guess is okay.
Yeah. Stuff's coming back and everyone wants to come back with their races.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, like coordinating timing for different stuff. I mean, there was a USARA survey. You probably got it too. Like when should Nashville be? So looks like Matt logging on.
Yeah, Scarlett disconnecting.
There. Cool.
Yeah, I was looking at Nationals because it's like okay, mid September. That doesn't help me a lot. There's a lot of other things going on in September, so
yeah.
Yeah, well, in like Jeff's new race in Colorado is the same time that I have nine motorcycle races in 7 days here at home. So, yeah.
Do you film them or do you race them?
No, filming.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. During the Sturgis Rally, so there were 7 motorcycle races. There were 2 off-road truck races in 9 days. So it's like, it's very actually where I've been working, I can go work for a half a day and then go up and shoot the rest of the day. So that's kind of convenient too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Schedule's showing up already.
There. What races are you going to film or take pictures at next year? You know,
C2C, Shenandoah Tough, probably Oregon. It's on the plan. Supposed to go to Nationals. And I was thinking there was one more that for sure. Oh, probably Maine, I think. But the other deal is I'm actually working for a sports car race team, actually like a job thing, getting paid thing. And they race about 15 or 20 times next year. So,
wow. You're not the crew?
No, I'm doing all their media, their okay. social media. Pretty much, yeah. So, yeah, I was in Wisconsin 2 weekends ago. That was our first one we did, and it went really well. So,
nice.
Then I got to go to Florida in the week before Christmas, and that's kind of going to suck to shoot for them.
Yeah.
It's like get the Google Calendar out and start putting things down.
Yeah. Are you going to film the expedition race in Pennsylvania that Bruce Stock's putting on?
No, probably not. The problem is June. There's 3 really big races at home that I've done for years. You know, there's a 200-mile gravel race and the 100-mile trail run and another big mountain bike race. And, you know, when you've done them for 5 or 6 years, you're kind of committed to doing. Plus, Paulette's going to Canada, so theoretically one of us needs to stay home.
Yeah.
You know, but, I'd really – I'm not saying no yet. Probably need to stay home.
Yeah.
So, cool. I see somebody named Scarlett Graham.
That's me. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how are you?
Doing all right.
Good.
Sounds like we've met before, have we?
No, I was going to say, I don't think we have. So,
got someone wandering around in my backdrop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least he's fully clothed, you know?
Yeah, there is that. Let's see. I got birds locked up. Dog might come in. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Matt is logging in, he says.
Okay.
But maybe the connection's poor. Yeah. I'm getting login. So should we do a couple handstands to get ready for the questions you're going to ask us, or we should
this way in 300 plus episodes, I don't think anybody's not been able to answer questions. I think you're okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Although actually I think about it, there's probably been one or two when you ask them a question and they're like, I don't have an answer for that. So.
Well, that was an answer, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But, it's pretty painless. You know how I am. I just ask you a question and you guys all talk and everybody's happy.
Yeah, it's easier to talk about than I guess be in it again sometimes.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my gosh, that's right, we did that.
Do you since we're sort of started, do you get like random flashes of the race coming into your head at weird times? Or maybe you're not far enough distance away from it yet.
No, I think it's usually when I actively thinking about it. Or like, I'm like, oh, my feet still hurt.
That's why my toes are still numb, because of that thing. Physical reminder.
Yeah. Well, how are you physically? Is everybody basically mostly recovered, or recovered as well as you think you should be?
I mean, I think my two big toes are still kind of numb, but other than that, I feel pretty good. I'm not ready to do like, hill repeats yet.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Oh, wow. Scarlett has a twin.
All right. Sorry about that, guys. I just was switching my computer. So
I did that. I did that one time because I wanted to watch. I think it was an AR Georgia thing. I wanted to watch on the laptop but listen on my phone. So I had two streams going the whole time.
Yeah. I wasn't very sneaky about it, though.
Yeah, that's all right. That's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
So Scarlett, how about you? Are you like physically ish recovered?
You know, I don't think so. No, like, I mean, I still have like skin just like flaking off my feet all the time. And I went ice climbing this weekend and it just like, it felt very raw on my feet. I think just like wearing those boots again, you know? So I definitely have some like lingering like foot things. And I'm just like generally like sort of just demotivated. I don't know. I mean, it's like crappy weather here. I got a lot of work to do. I've just been kind of like chilling out.
Is everybody's fingernails clean? That usually
I finally lost two of my toenails. They were like about to come off. I for sure knew I was going to lose them during the race, and then they just came off like 2 days ago, so that's pretty exciting. So they look much better now that they're off.
Other than they still look kind of funny, so
yeah, those weird bald toes. But I think the main person you'd need to ask about recovery might be Matt.
Yeah.
But I don't know why he's not on yet.
Yeah, he'll get here.
But
yeah, Forrest isn't old enough to give him IT support. Yeah, I don't think.
So Scarlett, since I don't know who you are, who are you?
So my name's Scarlett G, as you can see from my Zoom profile. I live in Bellingham. I actually used to live with Dusty and Emily. And yeah, I come from a running background. I competed collegially. I do ultramarathons now. And I also do a bunch of biking and got into adventure racing through Dusty and Emily. And yeah, I live in Bellingham. I work full time as an environmental scientist. And yeah, go climbing, skiing, whatever's good.
So what's an environmental scientist do?
So I specifically work for our soil and water conservation district, and I work with farmers, usually on like manure management kind of things, like keeping pollution from coming off farms into waterways.
Well, important stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's local stuff, but it feels fairly significant. We have some shellfish beds here in Bellingham that are they're tribal, and so those are just like kind of keeping those things open and keeping poop out of the water is like a pretty big deal around here. So that's my thing, is keep the shit out of the ditch, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you become an environmental scientist? Is it were you out poking things as a little kid and grew from there? Or?
You know, I honestly wanted to go into medicine, and then I got a little bit. I just wasn't into like the schooling process to become a doctor, and I've always loved being outside, and I got into environmental science kind of through like molecular biology and there's Matt. Just kind of found it as like a cool way to like, yeah, just like feel good about what I do and also get to do some cool science and get to be outside. Yeah.
It's not a bad job when you, what do they say? If you like what you're working, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I quite feel like that, but it does feel good a lot of the time. Yeah.
There's I'm curious. Hey,
hi, everyone.
Hey, Matt. How are you?
Hey, Randy. Good. Hi, Dusty. Hi, Emily. Hi, Scarlett.
So, hey, Matt. I guess I'm supposed to ask you if you feel like you've recovered physically yet.
Well, my foot hasn't. My ankle is still swollen, and I haven't gone for a run yet. So, but it's getting better every day.
Well, that's good. So,
yeah, today it yesterday it was swollen like up higher. Today that's better, and I can I can move my range of motion is better today. So. A little bit every day.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably get to it eventually, but what did you do to it?
He did a really long race. Yeah.
Okay. So just being dumb, huh? Just being a dumb adventure racer.
Yeah, that's the root cause.
Okay. I gotcha. So introduce yourself, Matt.
I'm Matt.
Short and sweet. So, and Emily and Dusty, you should introduce yourselves too, even though we sort of know who you are.
I'm Emily.
I'm Dusty. We live in, we don't actually live in Bellingham anymore. We're close. We're in Birch Bay, just north of Bellingham. But yeah,
cool. So, where do we start? Whose idea was it that a race in Spain would be fun?
I guess Dusty and I, because we were signed up for Paraguay next year, and I guess we've been signed up for that for like 3 years or how many now. But this year, because of just, I guess, some of the qualifications to get into Spain, we were able to get in. And we've never been to Spain. And we really want to do the world champs again. And so this seemed like a good opportunity. And Matt had told us that the raid races are really good. Or like, yeah, they do a good job. So.
Well, that's cool. And then you just found whoever you could suck into going with you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how that goes.
Well, when we signed up, we were housemates with Scarlett. Yeah. So, I mean, we've raced with Scarlett before. So we always ask our Bellingham teammates to see who's interested. And then we've wanted to do a race with Matt for a long time, but the last few years he's been busy and tough to nail down for a race. So we were excited to have him this year.
That's cool. So I suppose you actually probably have to ask your housemate if they want to do it. Otherwise it'd be kind of awkward, right? Yeah.
It could be, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a little bit of issues getting there, apparently. So I skimmed the race report because that's all the research I do. But so apparently not as much problem as Ben did, but a few little hiccups getting there.
Yeah, go for it, Scarlett.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, we didn't have any trouble, like, actually getting ourselves there, but we had trouble getting our luggage there, and we also just kind of had some,
so like, we had trouble getting there healthy.
Yeah, there was some of that, too. Yeah, yeah.
With our own, with bikes, like, because Scarlett got her bike stolen, like, a week and a half before we left, like, her race bike, so that was kind of, like, the beginning of some stuff. And then Dusty got an infection in his leg.
We had been like setting the course for the Island Quest race that we put on here. We weren't here for the race, but Emily and I were doing some course setting a few days before flying out. And I got a little bug bite on the back of my knee. No big deal. Until the day before we flew out, it started to get infected. So I was able to get antibiotics the night before flying out, and took those during the flight travel day. And it still got worse. And like I was limping through the airports during our layovers. So that was pretty rough. And I had to go to a clinic in Spain because it had gotten so much worse by the time we got there. So I wasn't really walking around much at all until the day the race started.
And then he was running on pavement for like 5 hours straight. So good test.
I could barely bend my right knee and it hurt really bad just to stand on it.
Just from the swelling from the bite or infection?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, do any of you speak Spanish?
Un poquito. And it's not going by any means. So it's, it works sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, how much harder does that make it for you? Just, you know, finding a pharmacy or something like that when you're over there, or did enough people speak English that you can navigate your way around?
A Coruña, like, I guess both the clinic had a really nice doctor who spoke enough English that she was able to talk to us for a little bit. And then she called her daughter, who was also a doctor who spoke fluent English, and actually had her on a video call during both. We went and saw her twice, actually. And then the pharmacy, I just handed them the prescriptions and they filled them. And I was able, I mean, I didn't have to talk to them very much.
Yeah.
And they understood a little English. So that was fine. I mean, I was worried about it because I was like, I don't know any medical terms in Spanish. But yeah, very nice. I learned through this experience with even the bags being not getting there and all that and everything. Like, there's really good people everywhere, but there were so many nice Spanish people in A Coruña that just like they were so nice. And we couldn't have got to the race start without them. So
was the race a big deal in town or in the area? Or was it a bunch of Spanish people wondering what weirdness is going on?
It seemed like a little bit of a big deal. Like the finish line was on the waterfront, like in the main drag with busy restaurants and in the merry-go-round and stuff. And there was posters up in town, like on along the sidewalks, like downtown, there was posters and banners up on the streets. So I wouldn't say that everyone knew what was going on, but there was a little bit of, you know, there was some people knew what was going on, it seemed like.
Yeah. So how about like when you're up, you know, in a more rural area where people are aware, or would they just be nice to the foreign people coming through?
I bet most people were just being nice, but there was like the Strong Machine team had someone, like their story of they were sleeping in a barn and somebody came out and found them because he saw them on their tracker and invited them into his man cave. So there was like some people along the route were watching what was going on.
Yeah. That's very cool. Yeah. So how much speechifying was there? Cause I always think that's kind of interesting. Especially it seems like in Latin America, like everybody's got to give a speech.
Now that you say that, I'm like, yeah, there were some speeches, but they were usually in Spanish.
Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
Us Americans like politely sat there and probably talked amongst ourselves, but there definitely was some, yeah, so different people getting up and talking, thanking people, getting everyone's family up. And yeah, I mean, especially at the closing ceremony, it seemed like, yeah, it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And all you guys really wanted to do was eat and talk to your friends, right?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, it was hard because you couldn't totally understand, you know, yeah. So that it's not that I didn't want to listen. It just, it was sort of impossible. Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I was excited. So,
yeah.
So what did you guys, let me ask. So obviously you had a plan going into the race. How long did the plan last?
Probably halfway through the first stage, if that.
Yeah, I was gonna say like 12 hours. That's on par with what you said.
So were you gonna go fast, go slow? What was the plan, and then what changed?
I mean, we wanted to be obviously more competitive than we were. We thought we had a chance at cracking the top 10 if we had a good race. We knew there's lots of good teams there, so that wouldn't be easy, but that was kind of what we thought we were capable of if we raced well. Somehow my leg felt pretty much fine race morning. I've been really worried about that. And the other three got all my stuff packed because I was basically lying in bed with my leg elevated. So that's what I was most worried about. But I ended up feeling okay. But all the rain that fell on the first night, that's what kind of started to derail our plans. I mean, we were all feeling it, but Scarlett's feet in particular got really bad, and she's never had them do anything close to that before. So, and there's only so much you can do when your feet are starting to turn and you still have 30 to 40 miles of soggy trekking to do. So, yeah, that was, I mean, there was lots more later in the race, but the initial, like, that was, I think, where it, that first night was where it started to turn for us a bit.
So there was a little bit of a quad explosion. Like, Dusty didn't have any poles for the first stage.
Oh, yeah.
And he was running, so he had the map, but he's not running with poles. But we were running, like, I don't know what pace it was, but a decent clip. Again, for the first 5 hours on pavement, and it was all very runnable. And I mean, we were up with the top 15 teams, I'd say. And then, then we hit like a point where Scarlett's feet were kind of blown up and Dusty's quads blew up. And then
we stopped for a break and to kind of like air out our feet a bit in the middle of the night and get out of the rain for a little bit. And then as soon as I stood up, both my legs, my quads seized up, and I've never had that in a race. I have to think the fact that I spent the 2 days before that laying in bed all day had something to do with it. And then, yeah, running without any poles or anything. But that was really painful for a few hours.
Did you manage to get them loosened up eventually to somewhat anyway?
Yeah, I mean, they were really bad for several hours, I would say. But by the end of that stage, they were beginning to feel normal again. And then the rest of the trekking stages, they didn't bother me at all. But it was really bad for a few hours, like really hard, especially going downhill.
Yeah, well, we'd had like several big downhills because mine were the same way, like hours before Dusty's. And I think by the time Dusty's legs got tired, mine were maybe starting to recover just a little bit because I'd been running funny by that for a few hours by that time. And then we had like two more big downhills, but then after that we had that long uphill up to the ski area. So like kind of you had to get through a couple of long downhills, but then we had, after that, we were kind of done with downhills for quite a few hours there. So.
Yeah. The uphill felt better than down. So.
Yeah, that's what it was for me too.
So Scarlett, how bad did your feet get? For those that haven't seen the pictures.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen me either. There were definitely some cameras around them. They're pretty gross. But yeah, they just like the skin on the bottom, like the whole thing was just like white and had like crack kind of looking things in it, and they were just like swollen with water. And the area in between my toes in particular, I just could never dry that skin out again in time. Like the skin kind of on my heel and, you know, arch of my foot kind of recovered, but the stuff right in the ball of my feet and like in between my toes just stayed moist and swollen, and then eventually blistered really bad. And yeah, it's like just the most painful thing I've ever really had for that long a duration too.
And of course it starts 5 hours into a 9 day race or 8 day race, right?
Yeah, with huge trekking stages ahead of you.
I mean, you guys, you knew the course sort of, but did it kind of surprise you that, you know, all that pavement and all the trekking and because it seemed like it kind of sucked to start.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought like basically we got a really good tour of that part of Spain without having to take extra days on either end of the race. Because the whole time we were on some like little country road through farmland and then the town and another town. And then like that part, it felt like a tour of that region. But it didn't feel very wild at all because there was always like a town we were going to hit. And I mean, there isn't much of that there though, because it's, you know, been lived in for a very long time. I was surprised about all the pavement, I suppose, and kind of a little bummed that there was so much pavement because it made it feel less like adventurous. You know, we were just kind of going through countryside, and it was really hard on the body, a lot more than dirt like even off trail travel would have been.
Yeah. So what was the nav like? Basically, just going to one road to the next road, and then how tough was it? How easy was it?
It was really unique. When people have asked me about it, I've described it as really complex. The maps were super detailed, and it was just the entire course was a huge maze of roads. None of them very major, aside from a few highways, which were all off limits. So when we were on pavement, it was like a single lane paved road with, you know, potholes in it. And so these narrow winding roads everywhere. At the same time, I didn't feel like it was as difficult as some other races because we were always on a road. So I thought the key was not making little mistakes, because I think it would have been fairly difficult to truly get lost. But there was huge opportunity, especially each time you pass through a town, to take the wrong road out of the town. And maybe it would only take you a minute or two to realize, but it would have been easy to do that dozens and dozens of times and have it add up to hours and hours, because each town would have sometimes a half dozen little roads or more going all different directions out of it. And even yeah. though they were tiny, they're these super old stone buildings, narrow alleyways. And once you're 50 feet into the town, you can't see out anymore. And it's just winding little alleys. And it was kind of tricky to figure out what road you needed to leave on.
Well, another thing that Jason Erkfitz pointed out was that each one of those towns, like the name of the town was printed right over the top of it. So there was a lot of places like there'd be important roads and intersections and stuff that you couldn't see. So yeah, the towns were, it was hard. Yeah, I agree that it was weird. Like it was getting out of the town was like a key part of keeping on the right path.
Yeah. So you come into the town square and there'd be like six roads going and you pick one, right?
Yeah. And
the name of the town is printed over the top of the town square.
Yeah. So you can't tell the six. Yeah.
What Dusty would do is he would take his fingers and try to like zoom in, you know, and like look really closely at the map.
I would usually pause right before going into the town and just come up with a game plan because the map was really detailed. But yeah, like Matt was saying, there would be text so you could kind of see maybe half the roads, but not the others. So, and I mean, we would pass through most of these towns in a minute, like they weren't very big. But once you were into them, just a little ways, you couldn't see out because it's just these. I mean, I'm surprised they can drive cars through some of those, how narrow the alleys were and just stone walls everywhere.
Yeah. So is that kind of navigating fun? I mean, it's obviously different than being out in the bush and, you know, bushwhacking, but was it fun?
It was kind of mixed. It wasn't as maybe stressful because I guess we always felt, or I felt fairly confident of where we were because there were so many features telling you you're on the right path and it was easy to follow bends in the road. At the same time, there was never a point where it's like I can take a compass bearing and we're going to go this direction for a few hours till we hit a ridge or something. So that got really tiring after a while, just having to be on and navigate tiny detail to detail the entire time. Thankfully, Matt was able to take over a bit to give me a break. But it was, yeah, there weren't many chances to zone out.
Yeah. So no, like, oh, we're just going to be on this road for 5 kilometers because there's not another road off it. There's probably 100 roads off it, 5 kilometers.
Yeah. There was like literally a decision to make, like probably almost every 100 yards. Like, and I didn't navigate very, like I only did it for a few hours, but I like, yeah. Dusty, like to concentrate for that long is, whew, it's exhausting.
His base was probably like 10 centimeters away from the map board on the bike, like at all times. Like you look over and he's like basically riding his bike like this, which isn't, that looked pretty awful.
Yeah, the trekking definitely wasn't as bad because of the slower pace, and I'm used to doing some orienteering races on detailed maps, but the biking was crazy because that was the only way I could see detail. I had to stop so many times, just stop for 5 seconds just to squint and stare and figure out which way to go, like over and over and over again. And sometimes I could ride with my nose almost touching the map if I wasn't afraid of running into something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lucky you. So how long did did it take, if ever, before you were not in a, basically in a conga line of racers? Did it spread out fairly quickly, or were you always around somebody?
Seemed like the first whole stage, we had a lot of interactions with people, partially because we slowed down a lot, so we had a lot of people passing us. So we got to talk to a lot of people. But yeah, I mean, there was one point in that first stage where we were like climbing one of our most sustained climbs. And yeah, we were like definitely just like in the conga line there. And, you know, the weather was kind of bad and the footing was bad. And, you know, it was really steep. So we were just all like marching along. And then we got to the top and there was a bit of a decision point about how to get off. Yeah, I think the first stage, and then, yeah.
Kind of spread out a little bit then. So
we saw people.
Tell me about the,
oh, I was just saying, we did see teams down the road, like during the race, but I also felt like we were alone, just like, you know, other races, like, oh, I wonder if there's any other people out here. And then all of a sudden you like see a team when you come around a corner. Like that happened quite a bit, but we didn't really have like a team we were racing with the whole time or anything.
Spread out like that. So tell me about the zip line mountain bike experience. I read about it a little bit. So who did what? Who rode and who got the zip line?
Dusty and I ziplined, and Matt and Emily shredded the downhill.
And how did you pick who got to do what?
Well, it was only the second time I'd ever ridden that bike, so I said I wasn't going to do the downhill. And then those three, I don't know, remember how you guys decided, but yeah, they like rock, paper, scissors or something.
Yeah, I think I said I was maybe most interested in doing the zip line or something because I'd never done one. Maybe that was what decided. But we decided at the transition, just on the spot.
How long was the zip line? Because they're all over and it seems like in Europe, everywhere is a zip line. How long did it take?
It wasn't crazy long, but maybe a couple hundred meters or something. What do you think, Scarlett?
That sounds right. It was dark, so it's hard to say, but it had one of those things where it like catches you at the end. Is that how all zip lines work, where you like think you're going to just like run into a wall and then it like kind of does a soft catch? It was my first time too, so
yeah, kind of cool. Yeah, I don't know how much fun it'd be at night. We did one in Portugal in the daytime, and it was I don't like that kind of stuff, but I decided on a zip line. It's because you don't start fast, right? You just kind of build the speed, so it doesn't seem like you're going to die right away.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. The zip line didn't seem that scary, but climbing up to get up there like required a little bit of skill. And then at the end there was like an automatic belayer, and you just had to like step off this platform and have this auto belay like catch you. And both Dusty and I were like, are you sure it's gonna catch us? And you know, the woman's like, just take a step, you guys. And we both hesitated and almost like tripped off this platform.
Yeah, we were like probably 40-50 feet up, and we both climbed with those devices before, just at, you know, like indoor rock gyms, but still you're up on this wooden platform in the middle of the night and someone tells you just to step off of it and you're exhausted already.
Yeah,
that was probably the scariest part for me too.
And they never tell you about that part.
No.
So day one, you're all wet and scruzzy feet and everything's pretty miserable. What are you feeling? And do you get a little down? And how long does it take you then to like get back sort of to race mode? You got beat up quads and all that stuff going on. So
We tried to sleep at the first TA. And that was a bad idea.
That was a disaster.
They had a designated sleeping room that was nice and dark and quiet when we got there. And then everyone's going in and out and they've got their space blanket and people are coming back in and shaking you to wake you up because they left something in there and they think you might be lying on it. And like, so we didn't really get any sleep. So that made it even harder. But once we got out on the bike, we started moving pretty good and the weather improved a bit and we started passing teams. We were definitely more spread out, but we passed several teams and that got our morale back up, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much of a joy is it when the weather gets better? The sun comes out, so to speak. I mean, how much does that improve your performance?
I guess it depends on the stage. Like on the paddle, after the hotel at that TA, it was sunny when we started and daylight, which was like awesome. Like I had a short sleeve shirt on. I mean, we ended up capsizing and then I got cold, but the sunshine when it was out was like on a paddle was, I mean, that was like, I could do this, you know? So for me, at least just having some warmth during like a stage that's normally freezing and miserable, for that section, at least it got worse later.
Yeah.
That was great.
So what kind of elevation were you at roughly, just out of curiosity?
It seemed like the first trek went from like probably, I mean, we were like a few thousand feet. Like it wasn't very high. Like maybe we got up to 5 or 6,000 feet.
Yeah, I think the ski area was, I think the high point was around 6-ish.
Yeah.
It wasn't crazy high.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the first part of that bike ride after that was probably like 7,000 then maybe for, I don't know, 10 miles or something. And then after that, it was all like, we just gradually got lower and lower throughout until we got back to the ocean. Like each stage got like, seemed like it got a little bit less rugged hill, like less steep hills. And then like, you know, you're gradually going toward the oceans and it, like, it wasn't like any more big mountains you went over. It was all like, I don't know, not more than rolling hills, but not any giant mountain range. Like it was all, kind of like, I don't know, more than rolling hills, but just ups and downs. So
probably that constant up and down, but not forever, right? Forever up and down, but not forever up, and then forever down.
Yeah, exactly.
So Skylar, is this your first expedition race or have you done
others? Well, it's my first non-stop expedition race. Okay. I had, yeah. So yes, it was, okay. As far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
When, for you particularly, when do you allow yourself to start thinking about the finish?
Well, during this race, I never really did until we got through like the 40 mile trekking stage and I knew we only had a kayak and a, you know, 20 miler left. But up until that point, I mean, my feet were bothering me so much that there was like a lot of uncertainty. I think if I could make it, or if I like was going to all of a sudden get an infection in my foot because of all the, you know, openings because of all the blisters. Yeah.
were you ever able to like put that out of your mind? I mean, or were they even sore when you were sleeping?
You know, I found that if I just kept moving my feet really quickly and just like got into it and didn't stop moving, I could kind of just like forget about it. But it was definitely this like constant like mental challenge, but I was trying to like relish in it and just be like, this is my journey right now. Like, you will overcome this, you know? But yeah, I kind of felt like starting and stopping was really hard, but once I just sort of like started, you know, mashing them into the shoes over and over again, I was like, all right, it's all good now. They're just there.
I was going to say the second big trek, the 40 miler, even though Scarlett's feet were destroyed, there was so much just relatively flat running on dirt roads, and she was just like just taking off. She just like didn't want to stop moving. We were all hurting pretty bad. We knew her feet were not any better necessarily than they were earlier, but like I definitely felt that she was just going and not, you know, exactly what she was describing, just like keep moving my feet fast and just keep trekking along.
Does somebody that's a teammate and a friend that's obviously, you know, not good, is that almost harder than your own miseries, worrying about them? Or do you worry about them a lot and kind of forget about your problems?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you're on it, I mean, yeah, like friend, teammate, both of them, you know, you're like, well, they're suffering. And like, is there anything we can do as a team to help? Cause we know, like, we've been maybe somewhere like that before with like whatever sort of pain to some extent, and like, okay, what helped me? Okay, how can we make this better? You know, and also like still keep racing, right?
Yeah.
Which is every team's like balance, you know. But yeah, it's like, you know, oh no, Scarlett's feet are exploded. What do we do? They look really bad. And like Matt had an extra pair of socks, so he like she wore those, I think, in the first stage, and then he had the foot powder that we all put on a lot actually. And tried to like take some, you know, pain medication lightly to help with just pain management, and then like cleaning feet and I don't know, encourage like, okay, well, like how can we help? Can we take your pack? Can we take some weight? Like, you know, what can we do? And also, yeah, like we don't want someone to get an infection either. Is that like beyond the race can affect a lot of things. Of course, Matt still got an infection somehow. We don't know how that happened. But, you know, yeah, I'd say like, yeah, it's your friend, it's your teammate. You don't want him. Like, we all know like we were going to suffer, I guess. Mm-hmm. But like, when was it going to start? That's always the question. And who's going to get hit first? And how hard is it going to be? And are we going to be able to keep pushing through that? And when do you make the call? Like, is this unsafe? And so that's, you know, always going through our collective brains, I'm sure. But it's not fun to see your teammate suffering, especially if you're like, well, I feel pretty good, but I can't do anything more, right?
Yeah. Did it ever get to the point for any of you where you thought, maybe we need to have a discussion about whether we go on, or did that not even come up? I mean, your adventure races, it probably never came up.
I think all of us had our doubts, even probably starting on the first stage, if we'd finish or not. But we didn't really talk about it too much. It was more, our mindset definitely changed a bit from competing at the level that we wanted to going in to, like, if we don't take care of each other, we're not gonna finish because there's so much race left and we're in such a bad place on the very first stage. So I think we were all thinking that. I know I was many points, I mean, throughout the whole race. Are we gonna finish or not? But we didn't really have a serious discussion at all during the race. Just more like what can we do to help, and just trying to be encouraging and whatever.
So I think this, each of you can answer this, but does that, the fact that you were able to overcome all this and finish, get all done and relatively unscathed, is that almost better than like a 11th place finish? I'm not going to say a top 10 because top 10 is pretty cool, but was your journey better doing this than finishing 11th?
If you're asking if I'd rather get 11th or go through all this pain.
No, that's still not what I'm asking.
I'd rather get 11th.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had a great race and we got 11th and I don't know, it definitely would have been, I think, less memorable than this. And I feel, especially now that I've had more time to process, looking back at everything going into the race and everything during the race, I'm pretty impressed that we were able to get across the finish line. And I've had a bunch of people that were following us tell me that they thought there was no way we were going to finish. So I am more impressed and like with what we overcame to just to finish. Yeah.
Well, it's easy in quotes if nothing goes wrong. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, from my perspective, it was really painful, like kind of a lot of suffering, and I could have done with maybe a little less of that. maybe finish a little higher. And I think the other like kind of frustrating thing to me was that I felt like we were still trying like really hard, like a lot of the time. Like we were just going for it still and just clawing our way back. And then it just felt like all that effort like wasn't actually making us go any faster as far as finish time goes. And like looking back, I'm like, man, we could have like stopped at some more cafes and just like enjoyed it a little bit more and probably finished the exact same place. I mean, I don't know. That's just kind of like how I see it a little bit. It's like, that's tough to like try so hard and suffer so much. And, you know, it not, you want to do things where you put in a certain amount of effort and then you get some result. And it just, it felt like we put in a huge effort and the result was just like, oh man, I don't know. Didn't feel like it equaled.
So Scarlett, so after this race, are you going to be able to go next time and things get really miserable and you're kind of suffering, say, well, it's not as bad as it was in Spain and keep moving?
That's what I do with this experience, Randy. I just chalk it up to like, it can't be as bad as that. I mean, I really think on like a technical thing, I figure out how to never let my feet get that bad again. Like, I just felt so like responsible for letting that happen, you know? And you're like, man, I let this happen to myself, but it affects everyone, you know? And I just would like to be more prepared so that I that doesn't happen again, because it seemed like I could have done some things better. And yeah
well, it was something new. I mean, you never, it never happened to me before, so how do you prepare for it?
Yeah I don't know. I feel like I should have known though. Like, I've been reading a lot of stuff now and I'm like, oh yeah, I should have been, you know, prepping my feet a little bit better, and I should have brought an extra pair of socks, I think. Anyway.
Yeah. So Matt, I have a simple question for you. So was it fun?
You know, usually like a month after the race, the answer is always yes. And you might have to ask me in like 2 months, maybe like around Christmas time on this one.
Okay. How about this? Was it memorable?
It was memorable. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, like we keep doing these races and somehow your brain just erases the painful parts, you know, like pretty soon after the race, but this one's taken a little longer to erase the painful parts. So
so on the last trek, which Matt was really suffering hard there, I decided to try and like maybe lighten the mood a bit and get his mind off of the suffering and maybe onto another race or something. So I asked him like what's the worst he'd ever felt in a race, so that, you know, he'd think, oh yeah, there was that one race, whatever, and be thinking about something else. Yeah. His answer was this right here. Wow. So it totally backfired.
So I don't know who wants to answer this. Any of you can? You all can? If you knew the day before the race what you do now, would you still do it?
Probably. I'm a slow learner that way, so yeah. I would. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You mean go through exactly what we did, or do we have a chance to do something different during the race?
Well, we'll say you have a chance. Okay. You have a chance to change things.
Yeah. For sure. But even without the chance, I think I thought I learned, like, every race there's stuff you learn. Like, there's this big, like, oh, yeah, this thing, that's a great idea. We could work on this. And I feel like this race, like, I learned so much about a lot of different things, and maybe would have learned the same stuff had it been like a perfect race or just like a, you know, really good race for us. And I think this was a really good race in like so many different aspects for our team. And like, we didn't finish where we wanted to, but like, I guess we were able to stick together and complete it. And like, with everything going on and all the mistakes that happened and sleeping through like 3 alarms and just stuff stacks up. Right. Just like, it was such a good experience, even though it was painful and really challenging during, and I would do it again.
So cool. All right. So we'll get wrapped up here, 'cause this is kind of one of my favorite parts, but what kind of idiocracy do you guys got planned for next year? You said you're going to Paraguay. Anything else?
I'm going to get married.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry. I missed you probably hear that.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal. So, congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, but I don't know about myself for races. So, yeah. Dusty and Emily have some big plans up.
Yeah. So Matt, how about you? Anything, or are you still processing whether you want to still do this or not?
Yeah, I'll have to think about that after Christmas.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, it sort of sounds like you had fun.
Dusty and Emily have plans for next year, though.
Yeah, what do you have ready to think about it?
We're hopefully going to do Guadalcinchi.
Okay.
And that's in July. And then we're signed up for, well, from 3 years ago too, the Rogaine World Champs, 24-hour Rogaine World Champs in California. That's in August. I think we're still doing that. And then Paraguay. And I mean, we're hoping to do nationals again It depends on timing though, because it's gonna you know the survey thing.
Yeah.
But those are probably, you know, I mean that's enough right there.
That is, yeah, and putting out a bunch of races and then and having a life, yeah, that sounds like you've got enough going on. So, but well, cool. Thanks everybody for taking the time and maybe convincing some people that they don't want to be adventure racers.
At least there's no video, so you can't like. And we didn't show Scarlett's feet. And we didn't show Matt's leg, or Dusty's leg. That would be more convincing.
Yeah. For all we know, those are just all stories.
Yeah. So,
but well, thanks again. Appreciate it, and have fun. And hope we hook up sometime next year somewhere. I don't know when's the wedding. Maybe I'll come shoot it.
It's in May. It's like right in the middle of when all these cool races are actually that I mean I'm kind of serious. I'm like, man, like that's when Canada is and Bend is, but I would much rather be getting married, but
okay, yeah,
it's in May.
Yeah, all right. Sounds like a good deal. All right, everybody, thank you.
Thanks, Randy. Yeah.
Thanks, hey, Randy. Sorry I was late.
No problem, we started without you.
Good.
Thanks, Randy.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, so guitar. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-Tip.
Where were you going? Who were you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. My mother went away for a month-long trip. Her and some friends on an ocean liner ship. She made a big mistake by leaving me home. I had to roam, so I picked up the phone. Got Ollie up to see what was going down. Told him I'd pick him up so we could drive around. Took the Dodge Dart, a 74. My mother left the yard, but I needed one more. Shahid had me covered with 100 greenbacks. So we left Brooklyn and we made big tracks. Drove down the belt, got on the conduit. Came to a toll, it paid and went through it. Had no destination, we was on a quest. Ollie laid in the back so he can get rest. Drove down the road for 2 days and a half. The sun had just risen on a dusty path. Just then a big had caught my eye, a man with a sombrero who was 4 feet high. I pulled over to ask where he was at. His index finger, he tipped off his hat. El Segundo, he said, my name is Pedro. If you need directions, I'll tell you pronto. Need a civilization, some sort of reservation. He said a mile south, there's a fast food station. Thanks to you as I started the motor. Ali said,
damn, Tiff, what did you drive so far for? Well, describe to me what the wallet looks like.
Anyway, a gas station we passed, we got gas, and went on to get grub. It was a nice little pump in the middle of nowhere. Anywhere would have been better. I ordered enchiladas and I ate them. Ali had the fruit punch. When we finished, we thought for ways to get back. I had a hunch. Ali said, pay for lunch. So I did it. Pulled out the wallet and I saw this wicked, beautiful lady. She was a waitress there. Put the wallet down and stared and stared to put me back into reality. Here's Shahid.
Yo, Tip, man, you got what you need?
I checked for keys and started to step. Well, what do you know? My wallet, I forget. Yo, it was a brown wallet. Had props numbers. Had my Jimmy hats. I gotta get it, man. Lord have mercy. The heat got hotter. Ali starts to curse me. I feel bad, but he makes me feel badder. Chit, chit, chatter. Car starts to scatter. Breaking on out. We was northeast bound. Jetting on down at the speed of sound. 3 days coming and three more going. We get back and there was no slack. 490 man. Madison, we're here, Shah. He said, all right, Chip, see you tomorrow. Thinking about the past week, the last week. Hands go in my pocket, I can't speak. Hop in the car and torpedo to the shack. The Shahid, we gotta go back. When he said why, I said we gotta go. Cause I left my wallet in El Segundo. Yeah, I left my wallet.
wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go.